Ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
If you're a listener to WUWM, you hear regular weather updates from the Innovative Weather Service right here. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to take you behind the scenes to meet the people who run Innovative Weather. It's a unique service established by the academic team teaching those rigorous courses that are the foundation for weather forecasting and staffed by some of UWM's brightest students. Joining us in the studio today is Clark Evans. Clark is an associate professor of atmospheric sciences, and right across from him, Mike Westendorf, a familiar name and familiar voice here on the radio station. In addition to directing operations of Innovative Weather, you hear Mike regularly delivering some of those weather forecasts on WUWM. Welcome, gentlemen. Good to have you both with us.
Great to be here.
It's sunny in the studio. What can I say? We've got the weather guys here.
That's right.
Yes.
Mike, let's start with you because this really is all about our students. The fact that that we have some great, great students who are not only understanding all of the background courses in terms of math and calculus, physics that go into forecasting, but they get to actually put it into practice. That's pretty unusual, isn't it?
Especially at the level that we do it. As we did some digging around the country, you know, we've been at this for over 10 years, and a lot of universities have some small things. You know, you do a little bit of campus forecasting or a little bit of a mom and pop kind of a deal, but nothing that is this intensive, where we're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The kind of partners that we're working at are literally making tens of thousands of dollars decisions based on what some of our young people are giving them in terms of guidance and advice. And so it is unique to have that level of responsibility, both professionally and personally, on a young person. And yet, It is probably one of the great reasons why they're coming here, is to get that kind of hands-on, apply what I learned in the classroom to the real world. And I love seeing just the personal development that comes by being in that environment.
We're going to come back in a little bit and talk more about those commercial clients that you work with. Mm-hmm. And I think listeners will be amazed when they hear the names of some of the companies that employ your service.
Yes.
So it's not just your forecast appearing here on WUWM, but really, as you said, involved in helping people make some very, very big decisions with a lot of money on the line. Let's bring Clark into the conversation, though, because Mike referenced, Clark, the fact that we've got students who are operating at a level that perhaps the listeners don't appreciate. There's a lot of heavy lifting that goes on before a student ever gets an opportunity to sit in front of a microphone and deliver a forecast, isn't there?
There is. They're learning a lot in the classroom, and then they're learning from Mike and others at Innovative Weather, their peers, how to actually translate that information into actionable details. Because how Mike and I might speak with regards to the weather would be a lot different than how you and I might speak, Tom, or how we would want to speak to the general public. And when Innovative Weather is dealing with clients that we'll talk about in a little bit here, it's more of that me to you type of conversation as opposed to the weather geek. Hey, have you heard about the cold front that's coming through? I think there's going to be some quasi-geostrophic lift in front of it.
Well, and I'm glad you used those words first, because as I was reading your background material, Clark, they said that you're involved in the understanding the dynamics and predictability of meso and synoptic scale meteorological phenomena, such as mesoscale convective systems. Okay, you lost me there.
Yes. Meteorology is a field that is filled with jargon, that's for sure. And so my background really is understanding big areas of convection, of thunderstorms, so to speak, things that are organized on scales of days, hours to days, essentially, that bring heavy rain torrential winds, hail, potentially tornadoes, to areas like Wisconsin, as well as in the tropics with hurricanes and tropical systems.
I don't know about our listeners, but I know I fancy myself as an amateur weather forecaster because I've got the weather channel in my pocket. And so I can pull up a radar screen, I could do the different layers, and I actually convince myself once in a while that I can tell my wife whether we can go out and walk or not. Invariably, I'm completely wrong and clueless, and I suspect most people are if they think that they can seriously be anywhere close to coming on the mark for making a forecast without truly understanding what's behind those tools that are in our pocket. There's a lot of math involved here, isn't there?
There is a lot of math. Students, I think, are surprised to learn just how much math there is involved with an atmospheric science undergraduate degree. Multiple levels of calculus all the way up to differential equations. It's a pretty intensive major, but it's a really exciting major to be able to apply that mathematics. Mm-hmm. You're not just learning about what a partial derivative is, for instance, but you're actually learning what it means in the context of how air is moving. And in particular, in meteorology, we really want to know if air is going up or down. And those equations help us to understand whether air is going up, leading to clouds and precipitation, or going down, leading to clearing skies and sunnier conditions.
Mike, when the students get into these classes, which as I mentioned, are very rigorous, at what point are they prepared or ready to begin to translate their knowledge of data into layman's language, terms that I can understand?
I will say that all the students are a little bit different. You know, there's not necessarily a mold, but from an academic standpoint, we do best when they've had their first true meteorology course, which comes the second part, basically the spring semester of their sophomore year. It's our 240 classes taught by John Call. And in it, they get kind of the first taste of applying math in a real meaningful way from a meteorological way. And a couple of the equations that they look at they're easier to understand and visualize. And John does a really nice job of that. It's after they get that first one in and that they're heading into ideally what we call synoptic or dynamic meteorology. That really is the guts of why air is going up and going down. If we've got a student that's coming in their junior year, that's probably the ideal time to be able to grab them. There's oftentimes some academic background to them, but they start stepping into this personal maturity. Sophomore to junior year, you start to see, quite frankly, the young man or the young woman coming out of that old teenager high school environment. And they really, I think it's an exciting time where they really start to see the adult world in a new way. And when they get that idea of professionalism, that's when I know that I've got an academic background that I can work with. And I've got a young person that has the personal and professional skill foundation to then be able to start training them on what is good communication, what is a risk assessment versus a forecast, and how we communicate with our various partners.
So when they do get to present a forecast here on WUWM, it is they've put in a lot of heavy lifting. They're not just performing at that point.
Well, and you know, it's funny that you say that, performing, because one of the things that we do, radio, one of the reasons why we wanted this relationship early on was because if they're going to pick up the phone and talk with the control center of We Energies, I need them to learn how to speak professionally. And this radio station is a fantastic avenue for that. So many of our listeners, you know, the demographics of this listenership, a lot of our listeners understand that we're in the training process, so they do appreciate hearing these youngsters grow up into becoming more mature broadcasters. But you talk about the heavy lifting. One of the heavy lifting pieces we do is we actually train them with children's books. That's my training piece, is at the end of the day, you are a storyteller, whether it's to us internally in the academic world or our client partners or to our listening audience, you're a storyteller. So we start with Clifford the Big Red Dog, because it's all about emotion. It's all facial expressions, getting them comfortable in front of a microphone and speaking loudly.
So there's no monotone. They can use be more dynamic.
They can be more dynamic. We use Dr. Seuss's "Oh, the Places We'll Go." We try to help them understand where their weaknesses are in terms of articulation, but also that's a mentoring book, and that's a big part of our culture. And then Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, because it's pure storytelling. And as we work them through that, then we have them start practicing the broadcasting a 45-second story of weather. And over time, that's what you as listeners, our listeners get to hear is in progress.
Clark, do you ever have students who start where Mike ends up in coming into your program who say, gee, it looks really exciting to be a meteorologist. I could be on TV. Maybe I could be on network TV someday. And they're caught up with the notion of the delivery of that information and don't necessarily realize all of the knowledge, the underpinning knowledge that's required to actually be the creator of those forecasts. Does that ever happen where suddenly they say, yikes, there is math involved?
I definitely think that there is some of that, especially for students who have perhaps not done all of their homework initially coming into the major. They think, oh, I'm going to be on television and I have all these computers that will tell me what the forecast actually will be. And so I just have to get up there and present it. But in reality, it is a lot more complicated than that. There is a lot of presentation storytelling involved, as Mike spoke to, but there's a lot of understanding all of that data. How do you put it together to get the best possible forecast so that when you are up there telling that story, people believe it. And through the track record that you develop, people believe it so that they don't then go on your Facebook or your Twitter pages and say, oh my gosh, you got the forecast wrong again. This is the 10th time this winter that you said it would snow and it hasn't snowed. What gives? So I think for a lot of students initially coming in, there is that perception of, you know, maybe there's not that much that goes into it, but they find out very, very quickly, whether at UWM or somewhere else, just by virtue of the courses that they would have to take, that there's a lot of math, there's a lot of physics, science, chemistry that goes into it. And atmospheric science is how you bring it all together to be able to tell that story, but it takes a little bit of time for students to get there.
How much data is there that has to be managed when you begin even imagining putting together a forecast?
So in terms of observations as well as computer model data, there's probably on the order of petabytes worth of data that are being generated each and every day across the globe. And any given forecaster is probably making use of a terabyte or more of that data to try to piece together their forecast on any given day. And it's not just in one place necessarily, but it's spread across hundreds or thousands of different websites, different locations. And so there's a significant amount of time that goes into going to this website to get my computer model forecast, this website to get my satellite data, this website to get my radar data, this website to so I can see what's happening at the surface, and then trying to piece all of that together and create a mental model of what the forecast will actually be like. It takes a lot of time, and there's a lot of inputs that are going into that.
How do you teach someone how to integrate all of that different information flowing at them?
A lot of it comes through practice, I think. If I had a great answer to your question, I would be a lot better off myself just because it's a challenge even for myself. And I've been doing atmospheric science for almost 20 years now, between my undergraduate days all the way to the present. I'm still refining how I piece it all together because the forecast, what I need to make is not necessarily changing when I'm making a forecast, but the amount of data is just getting larger and larger and larger with time. And so I have to decide, all right, what data is useful, what data is not useful, and then I can convey from my experience to students just what I think is most useful and not. But I think there's also no substitute for the students actually getting in front of the computer and having to make a forecast and then failing and then having to learn from that. Mike speaks a lot to that on the idea of failing forward, mm-hmm. and I think that is perhaps the best teacher. Apart from anything I can do in the classroom to give them the background knowledge, apart from anything that Mike can do to give them the communications piece and how it fits within the broader story, the broader decision support. Just getting in front of there, trying something and seeing if it works. And then when it doesn't, learn why it didn't work and then try something new.
Do the students, Mike, ever feel overwhelmed by the fact that there is so much data out there and they have to find a way to orchestrate it all into something that makes sense?
Yeah, it can. And then you factor into just the personalities of some of our young people too. Some of them are perfectionists And you can imagine how difficult that is because they already are nervous about making any mistake because failing isn't something they like to do. And yet we have to put them in a position where they have to confront that fear of failure to understand it. Sometimes that's where you're going to do your best learning. And so for me, it's a balancing act between helping these young people grow and mature through that process, yet still be able to manage the accuracy, the value of the product that we're putting in. And that's what a lot of our training process tries to do and a lot of our mentoring from our senior staff. And I've always said that, even if you didn't have this and you went and worked in a commercial enterprise or a National Weather Service, you need to see a full year before I would really consider you somebody that I would fully trust, because there's something in every season that challenges your assumptions. And once you get through that first year, I see anyway a difference in the way that they approach their. You can look at certain maps, and that map doesn't just represent five meteorological variables. It actually, you start to see it as a compilation of about 10 different things. And so you start to get an intuitive sense for what's happening. It's kind of like in sports, the analogy is in football. When the game slows down for a player, slows down for the quarterback, they can step to the line and they can see everything kind of happening in advance. And so when it actually happens, they make their adjustments that much quicker. And that combination of an academic environment in which they, they have to fail. You find out what you didn't understand in classroom and it shows up in your grade or in the training piece and even in our forecast. I mean, I've been doing this for 25 years and there are days I've got to go back and say, what happened? And so I've always said that our best and most successful young people are the kinds of people who value self-verification. In other words, I don't have to go to you and say, what happened? They're already coming to me and saying, this didn't work out so well, but I noticed this. Those are the ones who typically will do very well.
And also have a short enough memory to forget the bad ones and be ready for another day.
Exactly.
You're listening to UWM Today right here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week, talking about perhaps the topic that is germane to all of us, right? It's the weather. We're featuring today's conversation on Innovative Weather, a service that you hear regularly right at WUWM. Clark Evans, an associate professor of atmospheric sciences at UW-Milwaukee, one of our guests alongside Mike Westendorf, a familiar voice, a familiar name to listeners of this radio station. Mike is director of operations for Innovative Weather, and we're talking about ways in which the atmospheric science program at UWM is put together a marvelous opportunity for students to not only learn the science of forecasting, but put it into practice. And you not only hear that forecast come alive here on the radio station, but Mike, you also have paying clients out there, companies that are paying you and your students to provide really important information that affects their business operations. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, two things, because I'd like to take you down a little bit of a journey, because I think it'll give our listeners a really good picture of the impact that we're having both through our program and here through the university as well. But the first thing I would like to say is that there's a difference between a forecast where you're kind of just talking about generalized information and a risk assessment. And that's what we're really trying to do is help these young people move from forecasting, just talking about variables in the future, to, all right, what do those variables mean for your business, for your operation, and how you spend or lose money? And so that's really what our model does is it's focused on risk assessment. Now, for our listeners, just to try to give you the scope here in southeastern Wisconsin, if you're driving down I-94 out in Waukesha, you're going to come across about Highway J, and you'll drive past, you won't see it, but the We Energies Control Center, where they operate all of the crews that keep the power flowing when storms are coming in and things like that. They're our oldest, our very first partner, and truly a partner in every sense. And we've learned a lot from them. But as you drive by that's one of the groups that we go and we work with. As you hit the Marquette, the zoo interchange, you will be driving over roads that are plowed by the Department of Public Works in the county. I just talked with them here earlier on this month about snow chances when they were coming through. As you continue on, you will drive past Miller Park. of which we help them navigate the roof, not just for game days, but all the off game days to try to get as much sun and rain at the right times on that field. You drive down a little bit further. We Energy's big building is downtown. You'll drive by Chase Tower, where you'll hear WUWM forecasts. You'll see the MMSD smokestack and property on Jones Island, and you'll wind up right down in Lake Drive with Summerfest, of which we forecast for them. And then you will drive on roads plowed by the Department of Public Works in the city, of which we help them. And you'll wind up at UW-Milwaukee, where we help administrators. That's an incredible amount of opportunity to make a difference, not just for these companies, but for everybody here. We're, I believe, I think it's a great visual of one of the ways that UW-Milwaukee is impacting every life in the city and region of southeastern Wisconsin. And our forecast territory goes all the way out to western Iowa and all the way north to Lake Superior. So it's a pretty substantial impact that we have.
And these are paying clients.
Yeah.
It's not just a matter of giving students or the university an opportunity to have the kind of impact you just mentioned, mm-hmm. but they're putting cold hard cash down to yes. get a service that they are going to rely upon when making business decisions.
And we're asked oftentimes how can you do that, and we have to actually charge fair market or more than fair market value to be able to do this, and they're willing to contribute that because of the personalized service that we get. We understand. I always say, our job is to be nervous for you about the weather before you are. I want to know you that well. And that's the kind of level of relationship. That's what we call them, partnerships rather than client relationships, because we want to be able to experience that nervousness and then be able to speak properly into the probable outcomes and the possible outcomes and help them manage those.
Clark, as you think about the work that you're doing in the classroom, helping students to understand the theory behind these forecasts, how different is it today from when you first began forecasting? You mentioned you've been at this 20, 25 years. Is it more challenging because you have more data, or do all the tools, all of the radar gear, does that make it easier because you have equipment you didn't have a couple of decades ago?
I think it's a bit of yes to all of the above. It's a lot different than it was. The sheer amount of data that we have poses a challenge, but the quality of the data that we have is a lot better than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. Our computer models that help us make weather forecasts have vastly improved over the course of the past 5 to 10 years or so, such that we now have expectation that they will be pretty good out to 12 hours, 24 hours, 3, 4, 5, 6 days in some cases. Hurricane Sandy is often brought up as an example of how computer modeling has improved over the course of recent years. Computer models were able to accurately predict the track and intensity of that storm out to 7 or 8 days in advance. That was unheard of when I first got started in this field, and that was in the 2000s when I first got started. So it's been dramatic, the improvements that we've seen in computer modeling alone, and just the sheer number of observations and how often you have an observation, both in time and space. It used to be these really big boxes where you'd have maybe one observation. Now you've got really small boxes on the scale of UWM's campus, and you've got something there from a satellite, and you've got one next to that and on each side from there. So there's a lot more data that is available that I think has made it a lot easier in a lot of regards. It's made us look a lot better in terms of forecasters. But there is also the challenge of which data are better than others, because not all data are created equal.
And climate change. I mean, Mike, you mentioned you want to give a student at least a year before they feel comfortable. A lot can change in our environment within that year, which could disrupt the patterns that they may have been expecting to be constant going forward.
That is probably one of the challenges is, you know, for all of us when we come in a university setting, a university cannot give you all of the outcomes. And so you have the idealized model. We talk about the idealized supercell, you know. And so you have this picture, and yet in the real world it doesn't look quite like that, or it has many variations of that. And I think, you know, climate is a whole other, you know, spectrum that you can talk about where we're understanding more and more about that. But, you know, for us at Innovative Weather, we're kind of focused in on the short term, so climate isn't a huge thing. But I think just the spring alone, the one that we're experiencing, the impact of Lake Michigan, if you haven't been forecasting it, you may not realize just the tremendous impact that it has.
You mean Cooler by the Lake isn't just a slogan, is it?
No, it's not.
Sadly, no.
Clark, you're not from these parts. I understand that you grew up down south, so you had some adjusting to do when you came to Milwaukee.
I did. So I grew up in Florida from the age of 8 all the way through college. And when I first moved out of there, it was to Colorado, where in 2 consecutive years, we had the snowiest winter in 30 years and the least snowiest winter in 30 years. But even there, we got 100 inches of snow the first winter. It all melted very, very quickly. My first winter here in Wisconsin was the winter of 2011-2012, which, as you might recall, March of 2012 was incredibly warm. Temperatures in the 80s all month long, it seemed.
That.
It was fantastic for someone coming from the South, because that was what I was used to for the spring and into the summer. And then every other winter since then has not been anything like that. So I've had to continually adjust. That first experience was what I think that it should be, even as I know better in my mind. But I've had to continually adjust away from that. And each winter, each spring, each season brings its new challenges, brings its new opportunities. But I think the one consistent thing is that, yes, from the months of March through June or July, it will be cooler by the lake. And especially in April and May, it will be much cooler by the lake on the right days.
Any forecast for the summer going ahead? How's that putting you on the spot? Any sense yet of what we're going to be looking at?
I think it's going to be an active early part to the summer. I suspect cooler than normal, but my hunch, just with as active as the jet stream has been these last several weeks, that we may be due for some thunderstorms finally, some real ones here.
All right. I learned at a pretty early age when I was in school to never make a forecast that you don't have to make, but I'll make an exception here. It should be a more active than normal spring into summer season. How much more active, I don't know. And ultimately, it only takes one event, as we've seen with the floods in Milwaukee in 2010, 2011 or so, that produced big impacts in the Whitefish Bay, Shorewood area to make it a memorable year, even if the entire rest of the season was particularly dry. So I think I agree with Mike. I think it'll be a little bit more active than we've seen in recent years. Where we end up on the temperature spectrum remains to be seen.
So I tried to pin them down, but being the good scientists that they are, they've given me an indication that wait around, because the only constant is change, right?
That's why, and what you just heard there, ladies and gentlemen, that's what we call consensus in the scientific world.
Yes.
Terrific. Well, we'll whatever it is, we're going to enjoy it because we're in Milwaukee. And, yeah. You know, we have more good days during summer than bad days. That I think I can predict. Mm-hmm. If nothing else, because the sun is in a better place and a better position.
Yes.
Thanks so much for joining us today. Clark Evans and Mike Westendorf, two of the people behind UWM's innovative weather program tied to the department or the program of atmospheric sciences at the university. And of course, you hear those innovative weather forecasts regularly on this radio station. If you'd like to hear more about the great things that are studied and researched at the university, check out our podcast. You can go to wuwm.com/UWM today and listen to this program and any of the other programs we've done over the past year on UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody, and stay warm or cool. I'm Tom Lee Jack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lee Jack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.